have the distinct pleasure of opening the session here to and setting the stage for us and for our discussion to talk a little bit about, just to give you an overview of federal scientific regulations. I'd like to say it first out, I am not a lawyer. I'm interpreting these regulations from the perspective of an epidemiologist. It doesn't get me invited to a lot of great parties, but I do my best. Okay, the ones I'll speak about today are listed here. The first four deal with privacy and confidentiality. The last one, the protection for human research subjects. And I'm going to focus primarily on the common rule, though I will highlight the others. The purpose of this federal legislation is really to protect the privacy and confidentiality of an individual's data that are held by the federal government and to protect risks associated with being a research subject. The HIPAA privacy rule basically establishes a set of standards, national standards, to protect health data held by what are called and defined in the legislation as covered entities. These are health plans and healthcare providers who transmit health information electronically. And there's a lot of information about HIPAA and the privacy rule out on the web. I've included the website here. Fundamentally, this prohibits user disclosure of health data without written authorization and notification of patients. There are several exceptions that are important as we talk about public health research and public health practice. Those are listed here. A couple of the research-related ones are health oversight activities and perhaps research related to healthcare operations. The key for us as public health practitioners is that public health practice, the public health carve-out in HIPAA, does exist where disease reporting, investigations, and interventions are done and can be done. The Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, this is not directly related to health information, but it does protect privacy of student educational records, and as Gary mentioned earlier, and we'll hear some more about later, this can have an impact on public health activities. Basically, this prohibits unconsented release or disclosure of any identifiable information contained in an educational record. Again, there are some exemptions for this. Health or safety emergency is one exemption, and also this need to know for other health education professionals. How does this relate to what we do? Well, there are efforts to find solutions to the limitations that we have for public health access. Departments of Education and HHS have had some discussions about this. The implications are broad. A couple that I thought of immediately are implications for autism and birth defect surveillance, as well as other school health programs and initiatives that we are involved in public health. The next set of regulations that I think are important are the federal confidentiality protections that are afforded to all of us in the Public Health Service Act. This basically entails certificates and assurances of confidentiality that protect compulsory disclosure of data. So if people are involved in research or non-research activities, and they're covered by this assurance or this certificate of confidentiality under the Public Health Service Act, the researcher in the institution would not be compelled to release those data should they be subpoenaed or what have you. These are protections that are afforded to many surveillance systems and other data collection systems at CDC and with many of our partners. However, the application for these protections must be specifically made to the Office of Scientific Research or Regulatory Services. Finally, the Privacy Act. This act allows individuals to access the information that the government holds on them. So if information is held in a system of records and it can be retrieved by an identifier, like your name, for example, or Social Security number or other ID number, people can actually ask to see what's held. And it also controls disclosure of individual records without the person's consent. So those are the privacy, confidentiality, just a very quick overview of those. What I want to spend most of my time on here is the common rule. And this is the IRB law, 45 CFR 46, which outlines protections for human research subjects. Now, just to get us all grounded in why this matters, it did come. This legislation came out of the historic genesis of it was the Tuskegee syphilis study, where many African-American men did not receive effective syphilis treatment for several decades, so the Public Health Service could continue a natural history study on syphilis. So the reason that we have this and the reason that we're here talking about protection of human research subjects is real, and I want us all to be aware that we're talking about real people here. This common rule constituted IRBs, or institutional review boards, to ensure that legal protections existed for biomedical and behavioral research. Those two words are important, as you'll see in a minute. This is the place where we have the federal definition of what research is, and it's fundamentally a systematic investigation, including research development, testing, or evaluation, that is designed to develop or contribute to generalizable knowledge. Each of those words is an important one, as we will see. Now, public health practice is not research, and what we at CDC define public health practice as is the identification and control of a health problem or an effort to improve a public health program or service. Intended benefits of public health practice primarily are the participants in it or the community in which the participants live, work, or play. There is some confusion, as Gary mentioned earlier today, about how practice differs from research. And when I say practice, I'm really talking about the three areas where this really has impact in terms of public health is public health surveillance, emergency response or outbreak investigations, and program evaluation. Now, these are not research under the definition in 45 CFR 46, therefore are not under the jurisdiction of an IRB. So the first question that needs to be asked about whether 45 CFR 46 applies is it research? And while they tried very hard to define this specifically, there are some things that are very obviously research and very obviously not research. And then there's a huge gray middle, and that's what we spend most of our time dealing with. In 1999, CDC put forth a guidance for defining research. This was done in coordination with the predecessor to the Office of Human Research Protections, OPRR, is the predecessor. And we worked with them on this guidance. And this guidance defines research or differentiates research by its primary purpose or design. So its intent, or the intention of the research. The primary purpose is the driver. That is, that research, if its primary purpose of this project is to create generalizable knowledge, is considered research. If its primary purpose is to identify and control a health problem, it's considered public health practice. Now, public health practice can also lead to generalizable knowledge, but if that's not its primary purpose or design, it is not, in fact, considered research. What doesn't come into the calculus is what methods are used, or whether sampling is used, or even the investigator's affiliation. None of those things define research. We want to use as robust methods in public health practice as we do in research, of course. So the key here really is the purpose or design. The second question then is, okay, if it is research, does it involve human subjects? Well, a human subject is actually explicitly defined in the legislation, and it is a living individual about whom an investigator who's conducting this research does one or two things, either obtains data through intervention or interaction with the person, or obtains identifiable private information. Again, all those words are defined in the legislation or the guidance from OHRP. Further questions then follow that take a project down the IRB road. And that is, you know, is an institution engaged? Is the research exempt? Can it be expedited? All of this has to do with if, in fact, it's research involving human subjects. It goes down the IRB road. If it's not research involving human subjects, then what road does it go? So the question here is that there are federal standards for the ethical treatment of research subjects. What happens when it's not research but it involves human beings? It's important to remember that IRBs have jurisdiction only over research involving human subjects as it's defined in 45 CFR 46. There have been efforts to do extra regulatory review just to be sure. Okay, it's surveillance, but let's just put it through the IRB just to cover, just to make sure someone has looked at it. This is not what this legislation empowers an IRB to do. In fact, there is no legal protection given to anything that an IRB does with the exception of reviewing human subjects research. There has been, and there's a big literature about what's been called scope creep for IRBs, where in many institutions, IRBs are asked to serve as a risk management entity rather than to provide ethical review of human subjects research. So that means that a lot of things that aren't necessarily human subjects research have been or do go through an IRB. So what's the problem? There's confusion about the definition of research. There's variable interpretations. It's that gray area. There's some confusion about the role of the IRB and whether they should be actually used as a risk management entity. And there is some confusion about what ethical standards exist for public health practice. It is not the case that there are only protections for research subjects and there are no protections for people who participate in public health activities. There are, in fact, professional codes of conduct. There are state laws, regulations, and policies. And there are, in many programmatic areas, non-research privacy protections. It's just that they're not all in one place. So what's the risk here? This is a critical thing as we talk about what we are going to do to protect people who are involved in public health practice. The risk to subjects, for lack of a better term, in public health practice is really different than the risk to someone who is in a biomedical research study. The risks for people in public health practice are really privacy and confidentiality. We're not injecting them with a new vaccine and seeing how it works out for public health practice. Many activities that we do in terms of public health practice are considered minimal risk. That's not to say, of course, that privacy and confidentiality is a minimal risk. I'm just saying that most of the research we do, there is minimal risk to privacy and confidentiality. So there are lots of proposed solutions to this quote-unquote problem. I'm just going to review quickly three. One is a definitional solution, and this calls for clarification and a consistent interpretation of the definition of research and non-research. So where we blacken and whiten up the gray area a little bit. And that has its pluses and minuses. The second solution that is floating around is to develop an ethical review board similar to or not an IRB, but that this review board reviews all data collections, regardless of whether they're research or not. Why should they be treated differently if they're contributing to generalizable knowledge versus they're contributing to identify or control a health outcome? So what this would look like in some of these proposals is there would be a minimal risk thing like public health practice where an ethical board would review something. There'd be a set of moderate risk activities that would be exempt or expedited IRB review. And then there would be these high risk activities like biomedical and behavioral intervention trials where full IRB consideration should be and would be implemented. Finally, an additional proposed solution is the development of national protection for privacy and confidentiality of all data held by public health. There have been efforts over the last 10 years to move this forward, and actually Larry Gostin and James Hodge worked very closely with the HIV group at CDC to develop the Model State Public Health Privacy Act, which, because public health practice is under the purview of state and local government, it's not a federal authority, what the hope was that all 50 states would adopt this legislation, and then whether you lived in Alabama or New Jersey, your public health data got the same protection as anyone else's. An alternative to that people are talking about is really to look at some federal public health privacy and confidentiality legislation for all data held by public health. And this would be similar to the idea that we have federal protection for research risks, but where here we're talking about the risk as being privacy and confidentiality. So what I've done is tried to just lay the landscape here for our next two talks where we will learn a little bit more about the application of these federal regulations in state and academic settings. So I'm going to hand things over to Dr. Madaw, who will talk a little bit about the state